This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by the co-founder and I believe chief operating officer at Grotta. Grotta, he'll tell us what Grotta is and what they're doing. Brilliant founder. I know a Harvard graduate and an experienced private equity person as well. Nevin, can you take a moment and tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about Grotta, and then we'll go from there and talk about what you're doing and so forth.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Appreciate the kind intro and really excited to be chatting with you today. A little bit more about my background. You mentioned that I am a Harvard graduate, studied applied math and statistics. Thereafter, I've spent about 10 years in the M&A space, started my career as a management consultant at McKinsey, had also spent some time before that in investment banking at Jefferies and at another startup called Axial. Thereafter, worked in private equity and started Grotta with a classmate of mine. His name is Andrew Biskoski, seeing a really relevant problem that we'd experienced firsthand in our jobs in the market. And there were actually a couple of driving forces that inspired us to start Grotta. We saw, one, that there was an increased interest in private markets from not just private equity firms, but large corporations, investment banks, hedge funds, other traditionally public-focused investors thinking about investing in the private markets. The other thing that we saw that was changing in the world was the digital enablement of middle market businesses. So what was 2015, 2016, as we started thinking about Grotta, there became a huge spike in the number of businesses that had formed a website and that could form a website. And that was thanks to companies like Squarespace and Weebly and Wix and GoDaddy and others that boomed during that time, and Shopify, of course, that made it very easy for companies, and especially private companies, to go online. And so therefore, with more information out there and more competition, we saw this change and the shift in business development in the private market space, essentially how deals are sourced and how firms actually find private companies to invest in. So that inspired us. We said there's got to be a better solution from the company databases out there. And what if we could take what felt like Google, being able to go to a search box and type in anything you're looking for and get back private companies and get information about those companies really quickly. So we went off to build Grotta as what we called at the time a private company search engine. Spent numerous years building the algorithms, building the technology, and at the beginning of 2020, launched the Grotta search platform. And even over the last year and a half, we've gone through so much change and so much development and pretty rapid growth that's allowed us to evolve Grotta from a company search engine to what we call now private company intelligence engine. And what Grotta does is Grotta, very simply, as I mentioned, makes it very easy to find and research private companies. And so we power proprietary deal sourcing at most of the top private equity firms, a lot of the investment banks now, help with market intelligence and due diligence work at consulting firms, as well as corporate development and corporate M&A teams are using Grotta to source their next deals.
And so let me ask you a question. You're an applied math major from Harvard. Your founder also, I think, is a college classmate, your co-founder. He can't be brighter than an applied math major, can he?
Well, there is one, computer science.
Gotcha. So somewhat of a draw, we would say, between the Hatfields and the McCoys with the applied math and the computer sciences majors from Harvard. Magnificent. Nevin, talk a little bit about when did you start the company and when did you get your first customer and what was that like from a business standpoint to know that, you know, someone would actually, did you have beta customers first that weren't paying that converted from pilot to real customers? What was the evolution of the business from, you know, idea to building the platform and the software to actually engaging customers?
Yeah, it's a great question and one that's often not shared by a lot of companies. Our story is a little unique in that we started Grotta with this vision to build a private company intelligence platform, but we started off as more of a data service. And we actually, our company was called Grotta Data when we initially started. Our first customer was a private equity firm that came to us. They were looking to acquire insurance marketing agencies. They were actually doing a roll-up in the space. And they wanted to know, every insurance marketing agency in the U.S. that sells a particular type of healthcare plan. It's called Medicare Supplement and Medicare Advantage. And that's really, first of all, it's hard to find insurance marketing agencies. Second of all, it's even harder to find ones that do healthcare. And it's even harder to find ones that focus on seniors and do Med Sup and Med Advantage. And so there were all these criteria that they were layering in that made this a challenge. And they said, well, we know these companies are out there. We know they have websites. If you could just find them for us and get us all this information, this would be really valuable. And they were willing to spend tens of thousands of dollars to do this. And this was just one question that was asked one time. And we ran our algorithms, ran our web crawlers, web scrapers, aggregated the information, got them data, and they said, this is incredible. Can you do this again? And that was actually the real turning point in our first customer, where we realized that the problem that we were solving was really valuable for a certain set of users. And there was a need in the market. And what happened was that for a few years, we delivered Grata data in that way. And that allowed us to bootstrap a business for several years, build up the algorithms, the web crawling infrastructure, the technology, such that we could pivot at the beginning of 2020 and start what is now Grata, which is really a SaaS platform, to be able to answer these questions in real time.
Yeah, no, but that's a brilliant, brilliant sort of thought process. And it's so true of how so many businesses really grow. You had sort of product that was cash flowing, and that cash flowing product led you to sort of have the cash, or at least partly the cash, to build out the part of the business that you really wanted to build, that potentially has much bigger upside, which is what you're doing today. I mean, and that's a fascinating lesson for a lot of entrepreneurs, isn't it? Because a lot of entrepreneurs plumb that way. A ton of the great investment banks were founded off of fee-providing services and grew into the investment banking part of it. I mean, it's not that different than a lot of big, big businesses. Talk a little bit about that, sort of mixing both efforts as you grow, and then did you ever decide we're just doing the SaaS part of this, or are you still doing both?
Yeah, it's a very challenging problem to deal with, because at every point you have a decision to make, and that's short-term revenue for long-term thinking and building something long-term. Because when you deliver data or a service, your cash flows are different. You get paid at the time of delivery. Your receivables are a lot shorter. Whereas when you deliver a SaaS platform, you oftentimes will have different billing methods that may be monthly billing, deferred revenue, or you may collect upfront and have deferred revenue, but the whole dynamics of the business change. And we had to make a conscious decision to change the way in which we had cash flow, but also change the way we think and be more longer term minded, to really think through customers' needs, to say, is this a long-term need for you? Is this a recurring need? How much does this product help your business in the day-to-day? And in thinking through that, when we made that shift, I actually think that there are certain customers who don't work with us anymore because they wanted a service, and we had to deprioritize and stop providing the service. But actually, most of our customers who were with Grata Data actually converted to subscribers. And so there was some pain in having to turn away some revenue. But longer term, we think it's made us a better company, because now our users are more engaged with us. They think about us every single day. The average user spends at least an hour per week in Grata. And to have that type of mind share allows you to unlock a lot more things that we didn't do in the past. And I'll get to that as we talk about this later on, and of what we're planning to do over the next year. But now that we have higher engagement, higher usage, we have really a community of users that unlocks a lot of different features and information that you can provide your users, collect from your users, creating a really special flywheel in the type of data that we can provide.
Now, you and I both know that there's X number of public companies where there's lots of information available, but the world is constantly looking for better information on the explosion of both private equity funded companies and then private businesses that are not yet private equity funded, which is often just as often the target for private equity and venture capital funds. How did you get focused in this part of the market of trying to find data and information around private companies? How did you sort of get there in terms of your thinking?
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good distinction around companies that are private equity backed versus bootstrapped, founder-run, family-run businesses that are not. And we were really pushed here by our customers. Initially, when we came to market, we said we want to create better information on private companies, and we drew the line between public and private. But as we talked to more and more customers, especially in the middle market private equity world, everyone's looking for founder-run, family-run businesses, and that's where the focus was. And that actually pushed us to that subset of the market. And when I say subset, it's still 95% of companies out there. And that actually does make a distinction between what we provide at Grata versus what you get in something like a PitchBook or a Capital IQ, which is more information on companies that have been through private capital markets. Whereas in Grata, the typical user wants to find a bootstrap company.
Right. Things that have already been transacted on and stuff like that, which brings me to the next question. You know, answer it or not answer it, however you want to play this, you're free to. Don't be, have you guys taken an outside venture funding, outside private equity funding, or have you bootstrapped this with you and your co-founders?
Yeah, it's a fair question. When we made the shift to our SaaS platform at the beginning of 2020, we raised a seed round of capital that was at the end of June of 2020. Raised from a few different investors. One is Bling Capital. It's run by Ben Ling, former Kosla partner. He's out on the West Coast.
Sure.
And then we had investors on the East Coast
reputation.
Too. Yeah, but Bling has been incredible for us and really one of the leaders in seed investing, and as well as an East Coast firm called Accomplice. And Ryan Moore runs Accomplice based in Boston. And we had a few other investors join in too, Alumni Ventures Group. And then a few other industry executives who invest out of their family offices. And that was our seed round in, as I mentioned, the end of June of 2020. And then we raised another round, essentially like a Series A, and that was in April. We closed the round in April of 2021. So within the year, we experienced a lot of growth that our existing investors wanted to double down. So we let a couple of new folks in and double down on the company. So we've raised about $10 million to date.
And you had spent some time at Riverside Equity or Riverside Partners, a magnificent firm, and I know a relatively short stint before you founded this. Do they ever try and approach you and say, you're ready to take our capital too? We're ready to put private equity money in this, or still more in between this VC and venture and private equity side?
Yeah, we're still on the venture track, and that I think we're a little subscale for a $1 billion private equity firm. I hope to be there soon. But now the types of investors that we're talking to, as you think about our next round of financing, are more of your Series B venture investors and growth equity investors.
Oh, just magnificent. Congratulations on the success so far. And tell us, Nevin, the three big priorities this year, what are the big priorities this year, which will lead into sort of like moving from where you're at into this next level of growth equity and so forth? What are the three big priorities now?
Yeah, Scott, as I think about this from a product lens, we're always doing a lot of things, but really honing our focus. One, our users up until now have been very active. They come to Grata, to search engine, you know what you're searching for. You have an idea in mind. But we're thinking about more so how we can be more predictive and proactive. How do we let the user find companies with less effort? Give them features to find the hidden gems and companies that are getting less attention. Giving them recommendations, personalized searches, ideas to get started. That's one item on our roadmap for the year. The other one is, and I consider this the holy grail, but it's private company financials. Everyone wants to know the revenue of a company, the EBITDA of a company, the valuation multiple. And it's really hard information to get. We've developed some fairly advanced algorithms here that help us proxy and estimate these values. And we're starting to roll those out, really excited about what that can provide to the market using alternative data, new algorithms, and some user-contributed data as well. And then our third priority is more integrations. We started off with an integration with Salesforce. We also released one with HubSpot. We're just about to release an integration with DealCloud, and we're going to be supporting other systems like Affinity, Microsoft Dynamics, Pipedrive, Zapflow, and a few others, to make sure that our users' workflow is really seamless. We know that people live in multiple systems, and the easier it is for systems to talk to each other in the background, the easier it makes your life.
What an amazing effort to sort of get that kind of distribution rather than just selling one-to-one to private equity funds, have some of this other distribution efforts and so forth. What a fascinating effort, Nevin. You've had this great effort, magnificent work. Any piece of advice, and you've also seen a lot. I mean, you're one of these brilliant people that was at McKinsey, you know, the best and the very, very brightest, and now you're a founder of a company. I mean, a magnificent story and situation. Any advice you would give to other founders that are looking at this? I mean, you've obviously learned the lesson that this isn't easy. You know, it's not easy. You've been at it for 5-6 years. You're now at a whole other stage of growth. But any advice you would give to founders?
Yeah, you almost hit on my first piece of advice, is that it's not easy. You have to keep trucking through the good times and the bad. But I do have more specific advice. I've been thinking about this a lot. I get a lot of friends and others who ask me about my journey, and I love to always share what I can so people don't make the same mistakes that we made. But I think about it in stages. There's really going from an idea to a company. I consider that idea to seed. And then there's going from a seed stage company to a Series A stage company. And then there's A to B and B to C and then C to D in public and so on. I think I can give the best advice for what I've just experienced, which was seed to A in terms of stage of company. And a few things that I learned along the way is, one, it really does help to take time to get your foundation right. And in the venture-backed startup world, there's always a big rush to get to $1 million in revenue, and everyone's trying to show momentum of the business. But what happens is, when you start to raise more capital, investors really dig into your metrics. What's your average contract value, your pricing, your net revenue retention, your CAC, your LTV. And if you rush to get to revenue too fast, a lot of times the foundation can fall apart, and then you may have a less healthy business than you think. Ultimately, why does that matter? Well, if you have a less healthy business, you have less access to capital, you may not be able to get the capital you need to better serve your customers. So that's one thing I really learned.
Let's talk about that. There's this concept of having too much customer concentration versus not enough, people really reliant on your product versus a whole lot of users that don't use it very much. How do you sort of strike that balance of, you know, of the right kind of customer spending the right amount of money? You've obviously moved with the rest of the software as a service world to want to be in a subscription model versus a, you know, a fee for service, different model. You're not trying to be in the consulting business anymore. You're really trying to be in the software service model. How do you look at amount paid per customer and some of those metrics and the stickiness of those customers? How do you look at some of those issues?
Yeah, it comes down, a lot of it comes down to contract and pricing structure and how you align that with ROI. So let's take, for example, in the data world, you have a lot of companies that sit on their CRM, and their CRM is their store and their source of truth for companies. And some enrich their CRM once a year. So you can deliver that information to them one time. It can be a project. Or you can say, well, you need to have an annual subscription, and you may only use this product once a year, but you're going to use it that one time, and that's really important to you. Both will yield the same outcome in terms of revenue. You're paying the same price in either case. The difference in the latter, which is having it as a subscription, is if you can show that the price you pay for the subscription is worth it, and the ROI is worth, even if you just use it once, what happens is that having a subscription creates a different mindset. The user doesn't think about you as a project or as a one-time search or a one-time enrichment of data. The user thinks about you as a partner, something I'm going to use, something I have access to at all times. Having that mind share changes the way you do business, because now you have deeper engagement. The user may see new ways to use you, new projects may come up. That expands your reach, ultimately expands your impact. For us, it came down to getting subscriptions with the users who are going to engage with us daily, but even the ones who may engage and use Grata once a month or once a quarter, because we've been top of mind, we've seen our engagement metrics increase pretty exponentially over time as they found new ways to incorporate Grata into their day-to-day. And one such small example is, we released a Chrome extension, it was around 4 or 5 months ago, where you can have a little window pop up and see a Grata profile when you're browsing in Chrome. And that skyrocketed our usage, because we were inserting ourselves into the workflow of the user which is browsing the internet looking for companies. Now you see Grotta there, a little Grotta icon every time you browse, you open up the Chrome extension, you click a button, you're in Grotta. That's how we were able to get into our users' day-to-day.
And take a moment on this. You know, you will hear naive founders talk about total possible market, TAM, you know, total addressable market in all these insane ways. How do you look at total addressable market or total possible market or however, whatever stat you use in a way that resonates with you and resonates with your investors?
Yeah, I've done a lot of TAM analyses as a consultant, and you're right. You draw a circle, you put a big number. You draw another circle around it, you put a bigger number. Or you have your waterfalls. And the way I think about TAM as a founder, it's actually in a really practical way. I think about it from a revenue ops or sales ops way. I think about how many customers can our sales team actually sell to? Because that's really what our TAM is. If we were to hire, you know, X number of salespeople and they could each cover a territory of Y accounts, then our TAM needs to be X times Y times our price. And so taking this operational lens to it, we take a very bottom-up approach to TAM. And rather than taking the top-down approach, I can tell you there are, you know, $60 billion spent on B2B data a year, and we can capture some percentage of that. That doesn't mean anything. So that's why when we think about TAM, it's always how many private equity firms are there, how many investment banks are in the market, how many consulting firms, how many corporate development teams, and actually divide it into territories to give our sales team, here are the accounts that you can actually sell into. This is real TAM and real opportunity that could be attained.
And let me ask you a question along that. I mean, I know from running different businesses, we looked at different sales models of 12 great salespeople versus a boardroom of salespeople, you know, and different models are different. At one time in one of my companies, we thought we would use the logistics model, where I saw friends getting wealthy in the logistics world with these boardrooms of salespeople, and found that that didn't work for bigger relationship-driven customers. What does it look like for a software as a service firm? Is it hand-to-hand combat? Is it more scalable selling? What does that look like for building a sales team as you build it? How do you think about it?
We have built a solutions-based sales team, and a lot of it comes down to the complexity of the product or service you're selling, which is very closely linked to price point. And when you're selling enterprise grade, several hundred thousand, multi-million dollar type deals, it's a lot of hand-to-hand combat. You need enterprise salespeople. You don't think about it in terms of so much, which is our model, which we have BDRs and we have account executives, and BDRs help us generate leads, and account executives manage pipeline. When you're selling a very complex product, oftentimes each lead has such a high LTV or has such a high annual contract value that you think about it differently. And then on the flip side, if you have more of a transactional sale, you see this a lot with freemium products that have a premium price point. Once you reach a certain level of usage or users, that type of transaction is done differently, especially when the price points are lower. $3,000, $5,000 a year. So we sit somewhere in the middle. And the way we think about a solution-based sale is every time we talk to a prospect, we really try to understand how their problem is unique. And because we're somewhere in the middle, we don't see completely unique problems all the time. Everyone is trying to source more proprietary deals, and they're trying to find better ways to find companies. But what's unique is what they're looking for. Even two investors that are looking for the exact same thing. You could have two investors looking for mental health clinics. The way they think about it is going to vary slightly differently, which is the power of having a search engine to be able to search for that type of nuance. Our sales team needs to really understand what our users are looking for and then show them how Grotta can solve that problem if Grotta is the right solution for that problem. And a lot of times, if we're not, we will tell a prospect, hey, we're not the right solution for your problem. You should try XYZ instead.
Fascinating. And I'll let you go, Nevin, but so many interesting discussions to follow up on it. Congratulations on the success, the founding of this venture, Grotta. Amazing what you're doing. And we'll talk more about whether you've got some private equity funds that wouldn't want other private equity funds using the product, or it's more like PitchBook. Lots use it. Lots use the Bloomberg terminals. Doesn't mean that you don't have to be. You could be agnostic. You could be Switzerland and sell to everybody. It sounds like. In any event, we can get into that on another podcast at some point, Nevin. But what a pleasure to visit with you and hear about the story. Congratulations. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I would love to do that sometime soon. Appreciate you having me on.